Welcome to Recipe Club, the podcast where we debate the best way to cook the things you want to eat. This is the show where you, the listener, sends in your treasured, beloved home recipes only for three of America's strangest food people to cook them and then pervert them and do all kinds of crazy things to them using our proprietary Wheel of Death, which I don't have with me right now, but we'll figure that out later. Our special guest, well, I should introduce myself. My name is Chris Ying. I co-host this podcast with Mr. David Chang.
Hello.
That's Dave. He has fulfilled his contractual obligations for this episode, and we can continue to our special guest host.
I'm just, you know, just like trying to not be here because that's what people on Discord want.
We'll get to that in just a second. The third voice you just heard is from our special guest this week, none other than John DeBerry. Hello, JDB.
Hi.
We are gathered here today to talk about our theme ingredient for the week, which is coffee. JDB, did you select coffee in the draft early on, late on? What is your general relationship to coffee?
I love coffee. So I drink cold brew every morning, two cups. That's it.
That's your morning routine. Two cups of cold brew.
Yeah. Because the machine is too much work. I can't deal with all that.
All right, so
we got to get this guy a Cometeer subscription.
I know. I was just going to say, you're a whole world is going to be open to you.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Let's do a GRWM. Let's do a get ready with me with John DeBerry right now. Okay. Talk me through your actual morning coffee routine. Give us some color on the whole situation.
Okay. I wake up without an alarm clock. It's like my Kramer superpower. So it's usually around 6:30 is when I have to get out of bed. I have this big, like oversized, like Starbucks mug from like 1997 that has since been just totally clean of any markings. It's just like this white thing and the handle's almost falling off. And I put like, I fill it half with water, tap water, like cold tap water, put it in the microwave for 90 seconds and then add a quarter cup of the cold brew concentrate, which is something that I make basically like every week or every like 6 days. I have like a coffee toddy where it's like you layer like water and like very, very roughly ground coffee. And you let it sit overnight and then you extract it. And it's like this like very kind of thick coffee. And I just do it twice and that's it. That's enough. I tried to quit coffee just to see what it was like. And it really wasn't that fun. And I don't think I drink too much coffee. So I'm like really good with like my two cups of coffee every morning. I love bitter drinks. So that really helps. And I'm also sensitive to caffeine. So if it's after like 3 p.m., I can't have it. Otherwise I'll turn into what do the gremlins do, or what's the thing where get them wet?
Well, they're mogwai first.
Yeah,
they're mogwai first, and then right. they get wet and they multiply, and then gremlins. You feed them after midnight and they turn into gremlins.
Yeah, that's me if I have coffee after 3 p.m.
Chang, you are relatively new to coffee consumption. Do you have a routine around coffee? You've said recently, like, since having kids, you have begun to drink coffee, but like, are you religious about it? Do you worship coffee?
No. And you know, I, to be fair, I've definitely lobbed grenades at all the coffee nerds out there. I have to say that I'm just going to get this all off my chest. I think the worst kind of food nerd in terms of the comic book guy from Simpsons, the worst version of this is the coffee nerd.
Wow. Like,
they are, I mean, then it's followed by the IPA nerds.
Mm. It's pretty close.
And the beer nerds are, you know, that's, you know, it's tough. It's tough to decide who's, they're neck and neck for being, you know, some of the worst people out there. And then I'd probably say it's the orange wine people.
Easily.
Okay, but the orange wine people are a different kind of nerd, right? Like, the orange wine people are just like trying to listen to like a weird album of just noise and saying it's good.
No, but they're the terrible. They're terrible in their own ways.
I find the orange wine people tend to, like, the coffee nerds and the IPA people, at least they kind of have a sense, they know what they're talking about. Whereas I think orange wine people, if you tell them, like, if you describe orange wine to them, they actually won't want it. They have to say, you have to hear the word orange wine, and then that's like the whole trick for them. Otherwise, like, they're not really wine people.
I totally agree. Well, you know what? Let's just typecast it even further. Let's distill this even more.
Oh, let's dig our heels into this a little deeper.
Well, I would say that the coffee nerds spend, you know, we don't need to with their like $80,000 with coffee stuff with just like one. They literally have a corner of the house that's like their own barista chamber, you know. They're also the kinds of people that really pride themselves on their taste, and they usually wear extremely stylish clothing, but they dressed very expensively, but you wouldn't know it. Right? They wear the most expensive clothes that look like normal clothes. Okay. Beer nerds are just they're just like dudes, radicalized dudes for the most part. Excuse, mostly male.
Right. They're average Joes that just followed the wrong Facebook.
Yeah, and if they grew up in the 60s and 70s, they probably would have become comic book, you know, Comic-Con nerds. But in the modern era, it's transitioned to just being, you know, beer nerd. And they all have their own embarrassing beer handle on social media that they don't tell anybody.
Like, I got Mad Hops 27.
Yeah. All that. The problem, the real problem with the orange wine, no sulfite nerds is people think that they are cool. Again, in the Hefeweizen principle, the reason why most people get stopped on the orange wine landing spot is because they're accepted as the cool person in their group. All right. That's how, again, this is the person that started the Hefeweizen principle because they're the first person to drink a Hefeweizen.
It's like a sociological principle that says that you can sort of track a person's social development across their life by the alcoholic beverages they consume. And so it's named after the Hefeweizen principle is named after the specific moment in a, what is it, Chang? Like a recent college grad or a
college? It's usually a 19-year-old.
Yes. Like a sophomore, freshman, sophomore.
Guy or girl. It can be both, but mostly a guy, right? More than often than like, and they read Esquire and GQ magazine and they're religiously reading Men's Fitness and Men's Health. But they always have to be at the vanguard amongst their group. And the first thing they can be as at the vanguard socially is drinking Hefeweizen. Who's that guy over there with that tall glass, with that thin neck at the bottom that's putting an orange in their
beer? Why is there an orange in their beer? Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen a Corona glass like that. What is that they're drinking? That's the Hefeweizen principle.
It's a road that leads most to a certain point where they discover your sort of no sulfite natural orange wines and become the sort of cool vanguard of their social group. And many, 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 many people get stuck at that stage of development just on the orange wine square.
Many of my friends are in the James Murphy room, including James Murphy himself. Along the way, there are many rooms and landing spots where you can just stay there forever. But if you continue to progress in your drinking evolution, the last stage, really, again, achieving beverage nirvana in your drinking alcohol is when you get to a bar or a table with friends and you order a bone dry martini, gin martini.
You mean just like straight up chilled that's the, gin? Yeah.
Yeah. But they call it a martini, but that's it. There's as fast as the speed of sound. You cannot go faster than that. That is, there's no other way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the peak, depending how you look at it.
It's both at the same time.
Back to my original question. Dave, what is your coffee drinking situation like day to day?
Does it matter? Because
are you an everyday coffee drinker, or just when you need it?
I drink Cometeer.
Yeah. How about
that's not a plug. That's just like, you know, do you drive a car? Yeah, I drive a car. That's like the same. Like I drink Cometeer. That's what I do. Because you know why? I love flavor, and it's not to say that I don't love delicious things, particularly great coffee. But I'm just as an endorsement, I refuse to go to the lengths and troubles to make an exquisite brew. And we're going to talk about that later with my recipe.
We were just talking about the bone dry martini. Mm-hmm. What about the very, very opposite of a bone dry martini?
An espresso martini?
Espresso martini. Where do you land on the espresso martini?
I haven't had one since like the revival. And I don't even know if I've had one like period. But, you know, I'm very much like, you know, the title of my first book was Drink What You Want. If it makes you happy, I think that the word martini might be a misnomer because for me, I like to have like a specific kind of cocktail referred to as a martini, but that's not always true for everybody. So it's fine. I think they sell really well in restaurants. So good for restaurants for making money off of this trend. And I'm okay with it.
I would drink. I don't have a hot take on that. So they call it a martini because it's in a martini glass usually. I guess it has like a little espresso kind of floating on it.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I like drinking that drink known as the coffee espresso martini. If it weren't in a martini glass, I would enjoy it a lot more.
Well, I have to disagree with both of you. I'm a huge fan of the espresso martini. Huge fan of espresso martini.
Huge fan.
Huge.
Yeah. Can't endorse it
what's
enough.
What's your favorite like recipe? Where do you get it? You make it yourself?
When was the last time you had one?
I was at a wedding. Usually espresso martinis come out at a wedding at night. Yeah. For whatever reason, that's a theme that I've seen.
I can kind of see that.
And my first espresso martini, you know who drinks it? Is one of the great drinkers of all time. Fergus Henderson.
Drinks
at one of those late night clubs in London because everything shut down early. And this is like many years ago. And I saw this amazing man drinking something that looked like this. And I was like, what is that? He's like, espresso martini. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah. Give me one of those. And I also started drinking it like this. And it
like
was
out of
awesome.
Like out of an espresso cup?
And it allows you. No. Martini
but you
glass.
Just did the pinky. Okay, got it. Right. You need the pinky.
Pinky's
yeah,
out.
Of course.
Pinky's
yeah.
out. And I love it. And it's basically, what is the booze? I don't even know what goes in an espresso martini. Is it Sambuca?
No, that's more of an anise flavor, which would be good actually. But it's usually like, it's either a coffee liqueur or it's just vodka.
It's like, great.
And vodka, right? And vodka.
I would do it with gin. That sounds fun.
It's like a frappuccino exactly. in a martini glass with booze. What's not to lie?
I guess I would just like it in a rocks glass or something, but fine. Fine. I guess the tall stem.
Hey, Chris, I used to be one of you like you as well, ashamed of a martini glass. I'm not afraid of that anymore.
I mean, that's no joke. There is a certain level of just embarrassment and shame that I am trying to overcome with the martini glass. And it sounds like you've reached that enlightenment.
Zero.
It's just exposure therapy. You do it enough times and then you're good.
Chang, what about cooking with coffee?
Love cooking with coffee. I started doing with instant coffee for a long time. I love instant coffee for the bitterness. And the first time I came across a coffee in a dish was at a diner in Richmond, Virginia, where they served me ham steak with a red eye gravy, which is basically just coffee with like Tabasco sauce in it. And it's delicious, the saltiness, the spice. So that was it was like a ham steak. So when we started doing the Dave Arnold, like sort of helped curate the original Sambar ham program, country ham program, I made basically a red eye gravy, but instead of it being a roux based gravy, I made it an aioli effectively with a slow poached egg. and it's delicious with instant coffee because you don't want to add extra, you know, H2O to a dish. So instant coffee is an amazing flavor. I will say, you know what I'm a big fan of as a side note, Japanese and Korean canned coffee, which was also something we served at Sambar. That was our coffee program.
That must have been before me.
So people are like, can I get a cup of coffee? And it's like, yeah, you don't remember?
Like the UCC. Oh, man,
yeah. It was Dr. Pepper and, yeah, Boss. And be like, cause, and it's awesome and it's delicious. So I love coffee. I do love everything about it. And I love that it gives me power and energy. Yeah, it's great. What's not to like about a stimulant? I'm pro stimulants all day long.
I agree. And like, I think that my morning coffee routine for years and years has been that morning is all day long and I'll drink coffee from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m.
Yeah, Chris just litters with all these plastic cups, though. I see how it will come.
So Dave has shamed me into, thank God this is happening, I have now my non-disposable cup with me that I've been drinking my coffee from, Dave. But in his in fairness, he called me out for leaving my plastic coffee cups everywhere. And then I did start to notice that I leave like 85 cups a day just sitting around everywhere I go.
And I took a photo of everyone and texted them to Greta.
I did see you leave a mocha whatever on my desk the other day, but I think it was revenge. I just wanted to double down on that red eye gravy. I think it is such a hilariously and amazing romantic image of like the idea with red eye gravy is they pan fry a ham steak for you in a cast iron pan, put it on the plate, and then what's the gravy going to be? And you just can imagine just some grizzled short order genius cook being like, "You want gravy?" And then just pouring the coffee he's drinking into the pan, letting it emulsify with the fat and the drippings, and then pouring that. Yeah, that's what it is. That's all red eye gravy.
But let's talk about all the ways coffee that we know of in savory foods, besides ice cream, besides any sweet or baked application, besides cake, any of those things. Yeah, in savory, I think it's a little bit more limited to say like for whatever reason, like a brisket rub, like coffee grounds to some degree. Peter Serpico, the great chef Peter Serpico, did an espresso ground with venison and huckleberries in like one of the second menus of Co. And I thought it was genius and brilliant. And again, shows you the mind of Peter. It was awesome. But as coffee as an element, it's not something you see too often outside of, say, maybe like something that's in the southwest of America. But I do know that it has been in things like mole. Right. And it is in savory applications. It's just not something I'm very familiar with until today.
Yeah. I think that there's like a Singaporean like coffee spare ribs thing that, you know, is popular there. But yeah, I think it's pretty limited. And I think it's interesting because all of those dessert applications play on the fact that coffee drinkers generally, the broader group of coffee drinkers, want cream, like a fat richness and sugar to sort of temper coffee, right? And so like that is how people are used to this flavor. And so there's an expectation from a lot of people that when you're going to have coffee, it's going to be sweet and rich and creamy. And even in the savory applications, I think like that fat and that richness comes into play too, right? Like you do like Dave, like the aioli, the coffee aioli is like delicious. Right. It's got fat to it. And,
I mean,
and
coffee aioli sounds so bad. That's why you just call it red eye.
Well, I don't want to make it sound bad because the other thing I did want to say was you just brought me back so viscerally to that plate of country ham with the red eye gravy and that baguette was so unbelievably so delicious. Good. Sambar. So good.
But I think it's important to note that when people think about coffee, that they could potentially just sort of write it off as a gimmick or a fad. I don't think you're going for the coffee flavor in a lot of dishes, right? With the exception of, say, red eye gravy. But even red eye gravy itself, what I appreciate about what coffee is, whether it's a really bad cup of coffee, like it doesn't matter. In fact, I would almost prefer a really shitty coffee that's dark roasted and overbrewed because what I want is not necessarily coffee flavor. I want that actual nuance of bitterness. And bitterness is a flavor component that is, I would say, for most chefs, not utilized enough, right? So when, say, you say a char on a steak or something that is a little bit bruleed, you know, that moment where you have that flavor that's really hard to sort of pinpoint because it tastes a little bit burnt. In that universe is also bitterness, and you can get that from other extracts and other vegetables, right? Bitterness is an actual thing. But when you pair that with other flavors, it's no different than adding a little bit of acid from a lemon into a sauce, because I've always thought that it's not something you should necessarily taste outright, but when you taste it as a whole, it really does act as like a bass note, a bass player in a band. It just sort of ties it all together.
Same with cocktails.
So yeah, you can you can taste it, but it's not something that's overwhelming.
And to your point, like the instant coffee grounds are like exactly the right thing. You're not introducing any liquid in a lot of these situations. You're just adding that like little, it's like bitter salt, basically.
Which is why I think it's a misunderstanding, because most people assume that coffee flavor is something that you should get from, say, a dessert, right? When you have coffee ice cream, it literally tastes like coffee ice cream. It's like so pronounced and sweet, and that's what it is, and it's delicious. But I feel in savory notes, it's not something you're ever going to taste, because it's rarely do you eat coffee with that amount of texture and salt and fat that you might get in a savory dish. And I think it's an amazing element, highly underutilized. So I'm pro cooking with coffee. And it doesn't always have to be caffeinated. Like if you don't want to add caffeine and you don't want stimulants in your life, that's your loss. But you can definitely add that. It just has a distinct level of bitterness, that bitter flavor that is not pronounced. And I love it.
All right. So we received a fair number of recipes involving coffee from you all. We narrowed it down to these five that John DeBerry received and chose from, or maybe we strong-armed him into last time. So we had tiramisu two ways from Sarah Elzey, short ribs with chili and coffee by Jill Spinak, savory coffee mole from Juan Francisco, coffee lover's dream coffee loaf cake by Mary Bennett. I regret we didn't pick that. Night before, no bake, biscuit cake, and no churn ice cream, all caps by Claire Ellis. JDB, where did we go and why did we go there?
I wanted to do savory, I think for the same reasons that Dave was just talking about, because it's just such a underutilized component in savory dishes. So I think it was, for me, it was between the ribs and the mole, and I had never made a mole before. So that was kind of the tiebreaker. And it just looked like a really cool, complicated recipe.
Yep. So we went with Juan Francisco's savory coffee mole. And in fact, this is a recipe of Juan's own creation. He says he was listening to the podcast and heard Dave mention this idea. I think in the very, very first draft episode, Dave, you had thrown out that there's got to be some coffee mole recipes out there. He looked up a few, didn't like them that much, so came up with his own recipe for coffee mole. He says it draws a lot of inspiration from mole negro, since that is his family's favorite mole.
Well, my name is Juan Francisco. I grew up originally. I'm from Texas, El Paso, Texas. I grew up in Mexico for a bit as well. My absolute favorite thing, meal, was always like my grandmother's mole. She visited us for my birthday. She would ask me what I would want, and it was always mole. She did a style that's more like mole poblano, which is, you know, the mole is typical, like the more common found mole that's from Puebla. I pretty much like have traveled all over the world. I mean, I've been all over Europe, over Central Asia, and just different regions. And every time I do, I get to experience new and just completely different dishes. The one that I really, really stuck with me is like mole negro de Oaxaca. It's their specialty mole that's there for using like actually burnt chilies and a bunch of other stuff. I kind of just started, you know, making it. I started goofing around and trying to find out what I can do. The first batch I did, I tried to use my mocha pot and actually brew some like espresso. Actually use that for it, but it didn't quite actually get enough flavor for it. So what I ended up doing is actually incorporating a coarse ground coffee into it that I could actually cook in it, so I would steep, and then I would use then I would have to like strain it. The only thing is that if they ended up giving a bit of a gritty texture. So what I'm doing now is, when I use the recipe, I actually use cold brew. Usually when you do this, that whenever you make something like this, people tell you not to actually like scorch the chilies, because if they char, they tend to get bitter. But you actually want these to actually toast. And then once you actually grind everything and actually cook it, as you're cooking it through, it'll end up that bitterness will start fading away into more a savoriness. Chris's should be actually fairly simple, because you can do most of it in a slow cooker. I mean, if you're going to go Lux, you could go with some like Yemeni's coffee. Because Yemeni's coffee is probably the most expensive coffee on the market right now. Instead of actually having chicken, you go with duck, or you can go with some pheasant. You know, the Jamaican jerk is like what the jerk sauce is, what a lot of like clove, a lot of vinegar, scotch bonnets, and some peppers like that. So in adding those peppers and a couple of, you know, that to the mole would actually be interesting.
Basically, what you have here, you fry up a plantain that you've sliced into strips, set that aside, then you fry a whole variety of chilies, puree everything together with some nuts and seeds and cloves and allspice, some onion, some powdered chocolate, some dried cherries and dried apricots, a few dried Mexican herbs, hoja santa and epazote, and a dozen Maria cookies act as sort of the thickening bready cookie starchy component. You push that all together through a sieve and you basically cook this down into a mole. So it is, oh, and the coffee, of course, the coffee. 4 cups of coffee is the liquid component of this whole mole. I think it's basically the only liquid in the whole mole. So it's all of that good chili and spice and chocolate goodness gets simmered in 4 cups of very strong coffee. So that is how Juan Francisco made the recipe. That's how he sent it in. That's the original version. You'll see us making that in the video on YouTube eventually. But as always, here on Recipe Club, we are never, ever satisfied with anything. So we left our fates to the Wheel of Death to assign us 3 constraints under which we had to cook this recipe in our respective homes. Dave, in your absence, you landed on handmade. So we assigned Dave the task of making this mole, but also roasting his own coffee beans from green coffee beans to make his mole. So we'll hear about how that went. JDB, you got, I think, 2 restrictions. You landed on double taxation. And we assigned you the tasks of making this Lux, so spending over $150 on it, and fusing it with the flavors and cuisine of Jamaica. And I landed on slow cooker, which is becoming a real theme for me in this season of Recipe Club. So I had to make this recipe using no other cooking implements other than a slow cooker. So let's talk about what we did. I think that, honestly, mine is the most straightforward. So let me just go first and talk about that. Yeah. So for all intents and purposes, a mole to me represents, you know, classically a lot of time, effort, care, and knowledge. And frankly, a lot of that, except for the time part, is the opposite of what a slow cooker is about. It's just about like, I don't care, throw it in the pot and let's see what happens. So I try to basically do this as straightforward as possible, be as reductive as possible, just to see what happens if you cut out all of the sort of care, technique, frying, toasting, all of that out of the equation. Because a slow cooker, frankly, slow cookers don't get hot enough to fry in. And even if you can heat the oil up to a point where you're going to fry, as soon as you introduce food, it's just going to drop the temperature. They're meant to maintain a low temp. So there's a world in which I could have just sort of confit all of these chilies for days and days and days or whatever, and then made the whole thing, but I didn't. I basically threw everything into a blender. I rehydrated all the chilies in coffee to soften them up, then basically blended everything together and put it in the slow cooker and left it in there for 6.5 hours while I went to go visit my parents. I came back, and I will say the slow cooker was very effective at simmering this thing. And I could see how it could be useful in developing flavor and cooking this thing very, very low and slow and developing some Maillard and reducing it and all of that stuff over time. It could be very cool. But I think there is, first of all, I had to introduce a little more sugar to mine and quite a bit of salt. But I think there's so much that gets lost when you don't fry and toast all those chilies. And there's three or four different places in this recipe where you're sort of introducing fat to the equation. You're frying in fat at numerous stages. And that fat, I think, is carrying a lot of that flavor, adding a ton of richness to this sauce. And given that I didn't do any of that, I added some fat to the pot just to have it in there. But skipping all of that, did I make a mole? Yes. Did it taste like a Mexican grandmother made it? Absolutely not. Do I think, like, if you were in a pinch, if you were in a dorm room, or you were just living somewhere where you were truly desperate for mole and all you had was access to a slow cooker and, you know, an electrical appliance, could you make it this way? Yes, it might scratch the itch. But I think that, you know, for me, you know, mine was just missing that.
Well, how did you I missed it because I totally spaced. Did you puree it?
Yeah.
Is that one pot?
It's I didn't use it. I didn't cook anything else other than the slow cooker.
I don't think so. I think that you could have hand mashed it. You could have even used an immersion blender. But I believe
blender would have been okay.
Yeah.
But I don't even have an immersion blender. Otherwise, I would have immersion blended it.
Well, you don't have. That means you go get and find. And that's okay. Whatever.
There's really no substitute for that fat and that toasting and that frying part of the equation. It just didn't, it tasted like it was missing. And in fact, I tasted Dave's the next day. And I'm already conceding the fact that this was like a lesser mole.
I do think you could have fried it at a low temperature, like on a low temperature. Cause I was going high heat on my crock pot.
You mean on the stovetop?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think that I probably would have put on like a 4 or 5 setting. So it gets to like, I don't know, 200 Celsius, you know, 190 Celsius, just enough to like do it. So for all of those people that are in dorm rooms, and Chris said that it's just not possible, I think that maybe if you had a hot plate, it might work as well. So don't give up hope, people, if you're in that situation. I believe in you.
First of all, I didn't say it doesn't work if you're in a dorm room. I said it will work if you're in a dorm room. Second of all, I watched Dave shatter a crock pot on the stove, which is why I refuse to do this in my own home. So let that just be said.
Well, the difference between Chris is I'm going to continue to try it and try it until it works.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
I believe this is much more of a mole negro from Oaxaca than it is anything else. And I know that he said it was inspired as much. I think the only difference from a mole negro is that it doesn't have avocado leaves. Maybe it does. I just don't know the translation. I didn't even look into it. I think it does. It does have avocado leaves in it. I take that back. But I think the amount of chocolate is less, and some of the nuts might be similar, but I actually can't understand why it wasn't more black, because Mole Negro gets pretty black, hence the name. But I thought it was delicious. I'll just, you know, reverse do the order here. I thought it was really tasty. I didn't cook it exactly the way he suggested, but all the steps still happened. I think the one thing that is not in the recipe that has to be said is if you are going to make this, you need to deseed the chilies as best you can. All right. That's super important.
Why?
I think that it adds maybe flavors that you don't want. I've always been told, my friends, not always, but like, listen, I'm the furthest thing from an expert on any kinds of foods from Mexico, but I felt that the seeds were always something you tried to remove, and the stem, just like marijuana, right? You don't want to smoke. Yeah, everything's the same as smoking a big bong hit. You don't want the seeds, and you don't want the stem in there. Right?
No idea. Take your word for it.
So all of it was the same. I do think that it makes a healthy amount. I added a little more water. I would have liked to have added, I think this comes out vegan for the most part, but I think that, or vegetarian, because that is dairy from the milk chocolate, the powdered milk chocolate. I think I would have liked to have added chicken or pork stock, in this as well. But, you know, it was good. The cookies, you know, so it's again, I made mole a handful of times. I thought this was really good. And I laughed at, you know, that like it tasted pretty good. it tasted really good. No, I laughed. Pretty good. The making the coffee bit, if people watch, they're going to say, of course you suck at this because you make fun of people that, you know, roast their own coffee beans. So why would you be good at this? And you're right. I laughed because in no point in my life will I ever roast coffee beans ever again. You know why? I also don't fly a commercial airplane. I don't sew my own clothes. I don't refine gasoline. It's a lot of things I don't do in life. And roasting coffee beans is right up there as things that I'm never going to do. So I'm glad that I did it. I can put that in, I'm not going to say on a checklist because it's never going to be on a checklist in my life, but I did it. And I definitely don't think it's 15 minutes of roast time. I will say working with Cometeer, having to taste the difference in quality of beans, whether they have the shells, they don't have the shells, it's geisha, whatever, whatever. It's like there's all of these terms that all are important. And I found that I am much more of a light roast kind of person, and dark roast is really something that has plagued America because it's the reason why you need sugar and cream, because it's the only way that will taste good, because it's just so monotone in flavor. So I did it sort of in between. I think that if you're going to make this, you want the strongest blend possible. So mine was sort of like in between light and medium. I put it in a pan, and because I had no interest in reserving any green beans for future roasting of beans, I took my beans in the pan to the meniscus, which is clearly a mistake on my end, because the way heat works in an oven, it's hard to get it in a flat. So if I just did one sheet of beans, I think it would have been 15 minutes, but it's not my fault because the recipe didn't instruct as much. It just said, you know, put it in there. So I put it a lot of in there, and it didn't take 15 minutes. And I kept that out of the, it took me almost 75 minutes to get the color as desired.
Did you just leave them, or did you agitate them? Did you just stir them?
I was
around
constantly agitating them. And I was mad that
just emotionally, though.
Ultimately, I was mad that I didn't like use common sense, because it would have been done faster. And I was really disappointed in myself, because I tried to pride myself on being, you know, cooking minimalist in terms of any effort whatsoever. And I had to put way more effort into this because I just didn't do it right to begin with. If you see the video, which we'll post, you'll see that I blended. I didn't have – here at the studio, we have no coffee brewing. We just have like 100 boxes of Cometeer. So I took it in a NutriBullet. I blended it. Didn't work that well because I couldn't get it finer than, say, granola, a lot of the coffee beans.
Good God. Good God.
And I didn't have a filter, paper otherwise, to do it. So I put it in a double sieve double mesh sieve, so two. And but I did do the water properly. I got it to the exact temperature that is, you know, like 208 degrees or whatever. And I poured it like I was doing a coffee making video. You know, it was really delicate. Yeah, yeah. I was really like, but what's so funny about it was like when you look at the grounds, you're like, what is that, mulch? What is that? And I tasted it and I was like, this is actually really, I want to say, well, it wasn't so bad. No, it was really bad. It was not good. Whatsoever, it was not good. So I decided not to have a second taste of that coffee. I'd also say you definitely don't want to use my method for straining the coffee, because a lot of the particulates from my mulch grind got through, and that wasn't nice. And I would also say that when I added the 4 cups into the mole, I didn't taste enough. So what I did do is I put a cup of a canister of Cometeer in there, and I followed that as inspired by the recipe, because the recipe does suggest to add, you know, coffee to it. You know, not even coffee. Was it extract to some degree or something like that? Yeah. So I decided to put Cometeer in there. Then what I did to deviate is I had no interest in cooking this recipe at the desired 2-hour reduction time as you stirring and stirring, because when you get to this viscosity of a sauce, that's a dangerous proposition. Because two things that can happen. One, you're going to have a volcanic-like explosion if the heat is too high, and it's going to get everywhere in your kitchen. Two, because you also need to do it with the lid off for the most part, because you're trying to reduce it to some degree. You're also trying to do a slow cook. If I had a slow cooker, I probably would have done that. That's when I think it would have been a good thing to do, is just reduce it over time, because a lot of moles are just take like 3 days or something like that. That's not hyperbole. So I put it in any day, and I also put a lid on it, because if I didn't put a lid on it, it was going to explode. So I did one of the, just enough where the moisture would escape from the lid. And I did it for 10 minutes. I thought it was going to take 20 minutes. I did it for 10 minutes. And guess what? The recipe said to cook it down until it was a darker color. This turned into a very dark color, and it did reduce. And I thought it was fucking delicious. I did add more salt. I added a little MSG and a little bit more water before, not coffee. So I probably did 5 cups of actual H2O. Chris, I gave it to Chris to leave, because I had to leave for another meeting. And I got to say, it was extremely delicious. I liked it very much.
I did stick my nose into your roasted coffee beans, expecting to like be, you know, flooded with the delightful aroma of roasty, toasty coffee. And I was like, not there.
Yeah, I don't think I did it right. No. Like, I literally was like, oh man, like, some are dark, some are not. It's very, nothing is uniform. It's like what you would want, you know, theoretically, you know, how would you want diversity in America? It was like all colors, shapes and sizes of beans. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't not uniform. They had no uniformity to it. There was no sameness at all. And I got to say, it didn't smell good either. So I took a very simple task and I made it, I fucked it up. And that's why, again, no one should ever roast coffee beans at home. And I cannot wait for the haters to be like, oh, what are you going to do it this way? Oh, you should do it this way. Oh, it's so easy. I hope to never meet an individual that roasts coffee beans at home. I hope to never meet you in my life.
JDB, how did you luxify and inject some Jamaican flavor into this recipe?
So I don't know if where the stores, you know, how they price things at, you know, over in LA, but I basically bought all the ingredients for this, and it ended up being like $90 anyway. So I didn't have that far to go in terms of like luxifying it, but like, you know, that would be boring. So I actually did some research into like the most expensive. I actually tried to find the most expensive coffee shop in New York City so I could like find, like go and get like to-go coffee and use that as the ingredient. But that really wasn't coming up with anything. So I looked for like, you know, coffee, you know, whole bean or whatever coffee. And the number one most expensive kind of coffee is the civet cat coffee. That's like the cats, they like eat it and then they poop it out and then they harvest it. But then I also did some research into that, and apparently they're kept in very inhumane conditions. And so it's like not good to do. They're like, please don't buy civet cat coffee. It's like really bad. So the next most expensive coffee that I was able to find is from Thailand, and it's refined by elephants. So it's called Black Ivory Coffee, and I got a little package.
So this is also coffee that an animal has eaten and pooped out? Okay.
Yes. Yes. This is
elephant poop coffee.
Elephant poop coffee.
What is I'm aware of the civet cat coffee and the elephant coffee. What do the poo-poo coffee fanatics say is happening to the coffee that makes it better once it's been digested and pooped out?
Right, because when you harvest coffee, it's basically like there's like a fruit around it, and then there's some sort of like not like microbial fermentation, but like an enzymatic like fermentation that happens where they like remove the
cherry,
the fruit, and that kind of the cherry exactly, and that kind of, and that's like either by hand or by machine, and that's sort of like part of the process of making the coffee, and the animal processing removes that outer layer. So basically it's like the way nature intended fruit to be, where it's like the animal eats the fruit, gets the nutrition, and then leaves the seed behind, is basically we're taking advantage of that process. And apparently because of the digestive enzymes or whatever happens, it's supposed to be this like super smooth, like super amazing, like really complex, like very rare cup of coffee. And this company says that they actually don't really sell all that much to the public for obvious reasons. And it mostly goes to like, you know, the Four Seasons and the Maldives and stuff like that. So this is 35 grams of coffee that I got for $150. Oh my God, Barry.
Between this and your fucking glacial ice cubes, man, this is the end of Recipe Club.
I mean, that's, I had to get up to 150. You got there. I got there, and I followed the recipe for the mole basically to the letter. I did what I was, you know, freaked out by the re-adding the more coffee at the end of it. So what I did is I just ground all the coffee, threw it in with 4 cups of water and cold brewed it overnight in the refrigerator, and then just dumped the whole thing into the pan when I was just preparing everything. I actually did try to use an immersion blender for this, and I like ruined my entire life. Like, it just sprayed hot like chili paste all over my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a video of that, so it's actually pretty funny. I found myself having to add a bit more water in order to just get it through the sieve, but I took the standard mole recipe, and what I wanted to do, I wanted to find a Jamaica, because it's like, this is just mole, it's like a, you know, it's a condiment essentially, so it's like, what are you going to serve it with? And for me, I was looking through various Jamaican like traditional Jamaican recipes, and the Jamaican beef patty caught my eye. And I was watching a bunch of YouTube videos about how to make these patties, and in the prep for the meat, you basically like sauteing the ground beef, and then you add a bunch of seasonings, and then you also add something called a panade, which is basically like water and bread that you blend together into this like saucy thing. So I looked at the mole recipe, and I was like, the Maria cookies are basically the panade. So that's sort of added like the fusion element to it. So there's this panade, like bready, saucy bit. And I just threw in the mole with it, and then just built these patties. I had to go find like beef tallow. It took me forever to find, because beef tallow has the right consistency at room temperature. Rolled it out, and made these little beef patties. I think I probably made the dough too thick, because it was very like a lot of very thick dough, but it was really delicious. And I actually, similar to the watermelon episode, I also did a little spreadsheet.
Just to be clear, did you stuff the patties with like beef and mole? Is that what you're saying? The Jamaican beef? Okay.
Yeah. I basically like, I took a Jamaican patty recipe, and rather than all the seasonings that they include, which is like onions and scallions and much other stuff, I just used the mole as like the seasoning and the panade, since it kind of satisfied both of those things. So it was just straight up ground beef thrown in, cooked together, and then, you know, made into these little patties, and you just bake those for like a half hour, and they were great. And so I costed out the mole recipe. If you just to make it using this, you know, the fancy coffee. It was about $187 for 1.5 kilos worth of mole. It's a big recipe.
And how much is a single Jamaican beef patty stuffed with JDB's elephant shit mole?
A single Jamaican beef patty. It's in food costs. It's $8.63 per patty, which if I was running a restaurant would be about $30. So, and I made four of them. So, yeah.
Wait, and so you produced four, and like, what would you estimate your sort of?
Well, because of the dough recipe only gave me four patties. I have tons of the beef mole mixture.
What do you estimate your labor cost at? Let's say at $20 an hour, JDB. What do you estimate your labor?
$20 an hour. It's more like $250 an hour.
What do you estimate your $250?
I mean, if I had to hire someone to do this for $20 an hour, labor cost. I mean, it took a long ass time. Like. I did reduce it for 2 hours. I did have it covered because that's what the recipe said, but it definitely you need to let off the steam. I actually just like whisked it to make sure more water got lost, but it definitely turned a nice dark color.
But this represents like 8 hours of work. So
at least, with plus shopping, you know.
So I'm going to do some back of the napkin math here, and I'm going to say that a single Jamaican elephant shit mole beef patty at JDB's house of Jamaican mole
at
Shady V's is $65 for a single beef patty. Okay.
Yeah.
Honestly,
worth it.
A beef patty should probably be a great beef patty. It's a lot of work, man, and it should really be $30 to $40.
I agree. Okay. So those are the. JDB, I can't believe last time you found a ice cube made out of a glacier, and this time you found a fucking coffee that came out of an elephant's bum.
That is the most expensive coffee in the world. People need to know.
Absolutely incredible. It's okay. So there you have it. Three different variations on Juan Francisco's original savory coffee mole recipe. You know, at the end of the day, I will say just this base recipe, whatever you want to do to it, whether you want to use elephant coffee or make it in a dorm room or roast your own coffee beans, I think like this is a very good springboard for experimentation and just making this straight up. So
good recipe, Juan. Good one. Good job. That's right up there in the top 10 recipes ever made, I think, in recipe.
Oh, shit. Crack the top 10.
Well, let's be honest. It's not that hard to make.
JDB, this is your last episode, your last theme episode of the season. I think we may see some more JDB before the finale with some guest spots, but I think this was your last theme ingredient. So a lot riding on the line here because
no wheel of death
because right now the standings have it. John DeBerry in first place with 9.33 points. Priya in second with 9.25 average points per episode. Dave in third with 9.06. Brian and Rachel at a tie for fourth with 9.00. And Chris in the cellar with 8.79 points. We only have one producer in the booth today. That's Gabby. Gabby's going to tabulate her scores that she's been meticulously keeping and give me a first, second, and third place winner. Before she does that, I'm going to remind you all that the Major Domo Media YouTube page is alive and kicking, and you should check it out. If you've been wondering where all the footage is from this season's cooking, it's starting to pop up over there, along with what was a very popular video. Mr. Chang freestyling a beer can chicken was amazing and hilarious. We're planning all sorts of other crazy things. We're doing all sorts of stuff. I'll go ahead and tell you guys. Last week, Dave and I made a chicken pot pie from scratch, including the crusts and everything, with nothing started in 45 minutes, start to finish. Nice. Homemade crust, baked, blind baked, baked, and done in 45 minutes. We're going to try to do stuff like that, just uncut cooking. That was the only day that I've been sweatier than I am today. Also check out
John, have you noticed just the sweat just getting larger on him? At first I thought it was a shadow. It was a shadow on his shirt.
That's a shadow, but down below here, it's NSFW down there, guys. It is wet and wild down below this table. Gabby, give us a first, second, and third place for the week.
So in third place today, unfortunately, we do have Chris because of the blender.
Unfortunate. What happens? Can it still be qualified? Can you still call something unfortunate if it is the norm? Oh, unfortunately, the sky is blue today.
In second place, we have Dave. And in first place today, it's JDB.
Congratulations, John DeBerry. Yay.
Thanks, Gabby.
Another victory, which Gabby has updated the scores, I believe.
Yes.
To reflect these most recent, this most recent outcome, which stays exactly the same, except that John DeBerry has further secured his lead with a season average of 9.43. Which,
I mean, let's just give him the Constructor Cup trophy now. You are Max Verstappen and you won. Where everyone else is just battling for second place.
I mean, I'm not. I'm in a Williams over here. Am I just trying to get some points.
Recipe club?
No. You're Max Verstappen. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Chris, I don't know what that is.
You're Darth Vader.
He's currently the greatest F1 race car driver. And Chris King is the American counterpart, Logan Sargeant, who I've been trashing for no good reason.
I'm just trying to finish the race, guys.
Yeah. Again, John DeBerry, do you know what the three of us have in common with Logan Sargeant, the racer with Williams? We're in the same place as he is.
We have the same dead number last of points in Formula One as he does this season. So
zero.
That's where I am.
Yeah, I'm losing F1 right now.
All right. I know Dave's got to get out of here. Oh, we are going to have JD back. You're back for the instant potato recipe, I believe, in just a week or two time. So a chance to drop your score down. There's still time for Dave, Priya, Brian, and Rachel to overtake John.
Listen, it's just a battle for second place.
If they turn on their DRS. But thank you all, as always, for joining us, for listening, for giving us 5 stars, which I know you're all about to do as soon as you finish listening to this episode. Thank you to Juan for sending the recipe. Thank you to our friend Arthur Carletwa for sending us some green coffee beans to mess around with.
Thank you, Arthur.
That was very sweet of you. And we'll talk to you all.
Thank you for all the hate mail. Keep it coming. Gives me power. I feed off your negativity.
Please keep sending your letters to Darth Sidious here, who's just gaining more and more power with each passing comment on Discord. We'll talk to you all very soon.